All right, law students, ever think about this? You're prepping for the bar, you're gonna ace it, you're gonna land that dream job, maybe even wind up advising the most powerful person on the planet, right? But does that power, does the presidency, come with, like, a shield, a free pass from any legal headaches they had before taking office?
That's a really interesting question. It gets to the heart of some pretty fundamental ideas about executive power and the rule of law.
And that's exactly what we're diving into today, a case that tackled this head-on, Clinton v. Jones, back in 1997.
A case that, I gotta say, still sends ripples through legal and political circles.
Oh, absolutely. We're gonna break it down, beyond the surface stuff. You'll get the arguments, the reasoning, why it matters for presidential accountability, even now. This is your crash course, packed with insights.
We got a lot to unpack today.
We do. We've got our usual podcast notes, of course, but we also dug up a detailed case brief, a standard legal brief, and get this, a perplexity analysis.
Trying to cover all the bases.
Exactly. All those different perspectives so we can really get the full picture. Okay, ready to dive into Clinton v. Jones?
Absolutely. Let's get into it. It's a case that highlights this big tension we have, you know, a powerful president who needs to lead effectively, but also the idea that nobody's above the law.
Right. Nobody gets special treatment. And to really understand what the Supreme Court decided, we need to go back to the beginning. I mean, who was this Paula Jones and what was she accusing Bill Clinton of?
Okay, so back in 1994, Paula Jones filed this civil lawsuit against Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
At the heart of it was an alleged incident from 1991.
Back when Clinton was still governor of Arkansas.
Right, governor, not yet president. Jones was working at this economic conference and claimed Clinton propositioned her, made unwanted advances in a hotel room.
And she also alleged that after rejecting his advances, she faced some, let's say, professional consequences. Retaliation, basically.
Yeah, she claimed she experienced adverse treatment from her supervisors. It's important to note, though, this whole thing, these accusations, they were completely separate from his time as president.
Pre-presidency stuff. And what kind of legal claims did she actually bring against him?
Well, she went for sexual harassment and intentional infliction of emotional distress.
Under both federal law and Arkansas state law.
Yeah. Covering her bases.
Yeah.
And she wasn't messing around with the damages either.
Oh, right. She wanted $75,000 in actual damages, plus another $100,000 in punitive damages. This wasn't just about clearing her name.
Not at all. Now, Clinton's legal team, they came out swinging. They basically said, hold on, he's a president of the United States.
He's got a country to run.
Exactly. And they built their strategy around two main points. First, presidential immunity. They claimed that while in office, the president's shielded from this kind of lawsuit.
Untouchable, basically.
At least temporarily. And their second argument leaned on the separation of powers. You know, that idea that each branch of government has its own turf. They said letting this case go forward would mess with that balance, disrupt the president's ability to do his job.
Too busy for a lawsuit. So what happened when this all landed in court?
Well, first stop was the district court. The judge there took a kind of middle-of-the-road approach.
Didn't fully side with either of them.
Yeah, he rejected the idea that the president had this blanket immunity, this total shield from all lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
But he did agree to put the trial on hold to stay the proceedings until Clinton was out of office.
Citing those concerns about interfering with his duties.
Precisely.
Okay, so a mixed bag, but definitely not a slam dunk for either side.
Right. And as you might guess, Paula Jones, she wasn't happy with just a delay. So she took it up a notch.
Appeal time.
Yeah, she appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals, specifically the Eighth Circuit. And that court, they were more on her side. They agreed with the lower court, no absolute immunity for the president.
But then they went a step further.
They overturned that whole stay, the postponement. They were like, look, there's no precedent, no constitutional basis for saying a president gets a free pass on pre-office stuff.
Just because he's president now doesn't mean he gets to hit pause on a lawsuit about what he did before.
Exactly. And that really set the stage through this huge question to the Supreme Court. What are the limits of presidential power? And does it trump an individual's right to sue?
Heavy stuff. The Supreme Court agreed to hear the case, which legal nerds like us call granting certiorari. It's not every case they take on, so this was clearly a big deal. So what were the central questions before the highest court in the land?
All right, so there were two biggies. First, does the Constitution actually give a sitting president temporary immunity, just because they're in office, from lawsuits about their actions before becoming president?
In other words, does the presidency offer some sort of legal timeout for past misdeeds?
That's a good way to put it. And the second big question, even if there's no explicit immunity, Does the separation of powers doctrine mean that federal courts have to postpone these kinds of lawsuits, wait until the president's term ends?
Like, is it a constitutional requirement to hit the pause button?
Exactly. These are huge questions about the balance of power in our government. So what did the Supreme Court say?
Rum roll, please.
In a unanimous decision, the Supreme Court said no to both those questions. Justice John Paul Stevens wrote the majority opinion, and it was pretty clear cut.
Let's break down Justice Stevens' opinion. What were his main arguments?
Well, right off the bat, they made a distinction between a president's official acts, like things they do as part of their job, and their unofficial acts, stuff that's not related to their duties.
Private citizen stuff versus presidential stuff.
Exactly. And Stevens brought up Nixon v. Fitzgerald, a case from 1982. In that case, the court decided presidents are immune from being sued for damages based on their official acts.
To ensure they can perform their duties without being constantly dragged into court.
Right. But the Clinton v. Jones court was very clear that immunity is about the president's official duties, protecting the office itself.
Not a personal shield.
Right. Clinton's alleged actions, they happened before he became president. Totally unrelated to his job.
So the court said that presidential immunity doesn't cover those pre-presidency actions. What about that second big argument, the separation of powers?
Okay, so the court directly addressed that too. Justice Stevens said, yeah, okay, lawsuits can be a pain. They can take time and energy, create distractions.
Especially for someone running the country.
Right. But the court said that just because it's inconvenient doesn't mean it violates the separation of powers. They said the courts have the power to manage their own cases. They can work around the president's schedule.
They basically said, we're not going to let this lawsuit cripple the presidency. We can handle it.
Right. The judiciary wasn't going to back down from its own role in the system.
It's a checks and balances thing, right?
Okay.
And they didn't stop there.
Oh, no. Steve has also brought up some very practical concerns about delaying the trial. He talked about how it could hurt Paula Jones's case. You know, witnesses might forget stuff. Evidence could get lost. Or even worse, someone involved in the case might.
Well, pass away before justice can be served.
Exactly. Delaying justice can actually be a way of denying justice.
So they were looking at the big picture, the human impact of this legal battle. It wasn't just about abstract principles.
Right. And there's one more piece to this puzzle. Justice Breyer's concurring opinion.
He agreed with the majority's decision, but had some extra thoughts to add.
Yeah, he wanted to highlight a nuance. While he agreed that there's no automatic stay of these kinds of lawsuits against a sitting president, he said courts should still be mindful of the president's time.
Not just brush them off.
Right. He said if the president can explain, with specifics, how a lawsuit would really mess with their ability to do their job, then the courts should listen.
It's not a total ban on delays, but the president has to make a strong case.
Exactly. And in this specific case, Breyer pointed out that Clinton hadn't really done that. He hadn't given enough evidence to show this lawsuit would really cripple his presidency.
So the court was basically saying, we're not closing the door on the possibility of a delay, but you've got to convince us.
Right. The bar was set pretty high. So after this landmark decision, what happened? Back to the district court.
What was the outcome of all this legal wrangling?
So after the Supreme Court ruling, the case went back down to the district court to move forward. But get this. Paula Jones's claims, the whole reason this started, they didn't actually win in court.
Wait, what? After all that, she lost.
In 1998, the district court granted summary judgment in favor of Clinton. They said there wasn't enough evidence to back up her accusations.
For those who don't speak legalese, summary judgment means the court basically says there's no real dispute about the facts here, and based on the law, this case is over.
Right. Case closed in Clinton's favor.
Wow. So she got her day in court. The Supreme Court even sided with her on the immunity issue. But in the end, her claims didn't hold up.
Yeah, it's a reminder that legal battles can be unpredictable.
But it wasn't the end of this story, was it?
Oh, no. This case had some major ripple effects. You see, during that pre-trial discovery phase.
That's when both sides are gathering evidence.
Right. Depositions, document requests, the whole shebang. Well, during that process, Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky came to light. And that, as you know, became the center of the impeachment proceedings against him in 1998.
So even though Paula Jones didn't win her lawsuit, her case indirectly triggered a huge political earthquake.
Talk about unintended consequences, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just to wrap up that part of the story, Clinton did end up settling with Paula Jones out of court for $850,000.
But no admission of wrongdoing.
Right. But the Supreme Court's decision in Clinton v. Jones, that really set a precedent. changed our understanding of presidential power and accountability.
So, bottom line, what's the takeaway for all those future lawyers listening? Why is Clinton v. Jones still relevant today?
It boils down to this. Clinton v. Jones made it crystal clear that even the president of the United States is not above the law when it comes to their private actions.
No matter how high you climb, the law still applies.
Exactly. The court said no. Presidents don't get a free pass from lawsuits about what they did before taking office. And while courts should be considerate of the demands on a president's time, they don't have to automatically postpone those lawsuits. It's a balancing act.
Courts have the power to manage these cases fairly.
Exactly. And I think that's the key message. No pause button for pre-presidency actions, and the courts have a duty to make sure of that.
It's about checks and balances, ensuring that even the most powerful person in the country is accountable.
It really gets to the heart of what kind of democracy we want to be.
Okay, so we've covered the facts, the arguments, the decision. But Clinton v. Jones, it raises some really big questions that are still relevant today.
Absolutely. Questions that any lawyer, any citizen, really should be thinking about.
How do we hold powerful people accountable? How do we balance individual rights with the needs of leadership?
Big questions. And Clinton v. Jones really forces us to wrestle with those questions, to think critically about where the lines are drawn.
It's a case that shows us the law is constantly evolving, always adapting to new challenges.
And that's the exciting part, right? We get to be a part of that evolution, shaping the legal landscape of tomorrow.
Well, thank you so much for taking us through this case. Clinton v. Jones is a great example of how seemingly straightforward legal questions can have massive implications. It's a reminder that law is about more than just rules on a page. It's about power, accountability, and the ongoing struggle to create a just society. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
It was my pleasure. Always fascinating to revisit these landmark cases.
And to our listeners, keep those legal brains buzzing. We'll see you next time for another deep dive into the world of law.